leave the mic.
Yeah, yeah.
So our next speaker will be Markus Wolf via Zoom, I guess. Could I get...
I can hear you,
but I haven't seen, I mean, you should share the
yeah.
Okay, it's here. So as you can see, the talk by Markus from the University of Tübingen will be about some non-time symmetric initial datasets and their properties. So Markus, start, please.
Okay, thank you very much. And I also want to like to thank the organizers for the opportunity to speak here. So today I want to talk about joint work with Armando Cabrera Pacheco on a node on time symmetric initial datasets. In particular, let me give you a brief overview. What we are mainly interested in two questions, one which will be Penrose type total energy bounds, or ideally full Penrose inequalities, and further motivated by both the quasi-spherical construction of Bartnik and the more recent work by Rax, we are also considered in the construction of such initial data sets that will be ideally globally asymptotically flat. And since these questions are rather difficult to address in general, we propose, first of all, a very specific family of initial data set to first study these questions within these toy models. So just let me give you a brief reminder. What we call initial data, an initial data set. An initial data set will be a triple MGK, where MG will be a Riemannian manifold and K a symmetric two tensor that will together satisfy the following two relations, which we call the constraint equations, where mu is called the Hamiltonian constraint and will be a function, and J will be a one form called the momentum constraint. And we will sometimes allow for a possible constant lambda, which we refer to as the cosmological constant. And in general relativity, such initial data sets naturally arise as space-like hypersurface of an ambient spacetime M bar G bar, where then K will exactly be the second fundamental form of our slice MG, and mu and J will be given by the following components of the Einstein tensor, and then the above relation will hold due to the Gauss and Kodaty equations. And today, and always in the following, we'll only look at very special family of initial data sets defined as the following. So M will always be the cross product between a non-negative real interval and the standard sphere, such that both the metric G and the second fundamental form K are of the following block diagonal structure, such that they are essentially fully determined by these three functions N, K, and P, and the path of metrics we call sigma R, where we want our path of metrics to converge asymptotically towards the round metric as R goes to infinity. And for an example, you can think of volume preserving Ricci flow starting from any metric on the round sphere that will exactly converge toward the round metric. And essentially, we will therefore, in a lot of examples, have in fact exponentially fast convergence towards the round metric. So generally, we're less concerned with the asymptotic behavior or the asymptotic convergence precisely. However, to shorten the computations a lot, we also require the path of metrics to have the following additional assumptions, such that the time derivative of the path traced with respect to the metric itself will be zero everywhere. And of course, this will in particularly imply volume preserving, but this is a slightly stronger assumption. However, given any volume preserving path of metrics, we can always achieve this just by a change of coordinates of the underlying metric. And for example, I can refer here to the work of Mandolidis and Shane, where they exactly utilize such paths of metrics in their gluing construction. And the idea looking at exactly this family of initial data sets comes from the fact that they of course contain the rotationally symmetric case. So when N, K, and P only depend on R, and our path of metrics is just trivially the round metric, and in case of Penrose inequality and other contexts, the rotationally symmetric case is well understood. And so this slightly general class of initial data sets will hopefully, we can similar characterize quite rigidly, but it will be allowed for more freedom. For example, we want to have an exact ADM momentum in the sense, which I will define in a second. So, and if we look at this class of initial data sets, then we can write our constraint equation as the following evolutionary system. And this viewpoint on the constraint equations is mainly motivated by both the quasi-spherical symmetric of Bartnik in the time symmetric case, and more recently by a paper by Rax, where he casts the constraint equation either as a hyperbolic parabolic or an hyperbolic algebraic system, depending on what unknowns you want to solve for. And in this explicit case, we see that we can write the Hamiltonian constraint as a parabolic equation on our metric coefficient n. The radial direction of the momentum constraint will give an ODE on this curvature quantity P, and then the angular directions will yield a coupling equation. And we want to exactly study these equations in the context of asymptotically flatness, both in the sense that given certain energy conditions, more precisely the dominant energy condition, we want to study total energy bounds on our system. And also more related to the work of Bartnik and Rax, we want to see if we can solve these constraint equations as an evolutionary system such that we will get global solutions, which will be asymptotically flat.
A question?
Yes.
You said that you're going to take functions which tend exponentially to the flat metric. Did I understand it correctly, or
only the path of metric? So the functions n, k, and p will have a different decay, which I will define in a second.
Can you repeat? Only what?
So only along the path of metrics. So the path of metrics will generally converge exponentially fast toward the round metrics. But it still leaves the decay of n, k, and p to be determined.
So you have an extra parameter in your family of metrics. That's what you're saying, and that's your path of metrics.
So you fix this family of path of metrics initially. Like you, there's not only one, but generally we'll assume this to be fixed beforehand.
Okay. So continuous one parameter family of metrics.
In this sense, yeah, exactly.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you for the question. Regarding the question, to be a little bit more precise, what we mean with asymptotically flat. So this boils down to requiring the right decay on our functions n, k, and p, and of course this different tensor. But as it was already pointed out, usually we have even stronger decay on this one. So we are more concerned with the decay on n, k, and p. And if we additionally require that our Hamiltonian momentum constraint will be integrable, this will precisely coincide with the usual definition of asymptotically flatness. In particularly, and here I'm giving only the exact relations for n equal to 3, we can define a notion of total energy and momentum called the ADM energy and the ADM momentum. And in our family of initial data, that they will be given exactly by these formulas.
Did you say that things depend only upon R, all your functions?
No, the functions may define also on the angles. When they only depend on R, this is exactly what we understand as the rotationally symmetric case.
But you're not assuming this.
No, we're not assuming this. So we are not exactly in rotationally symmetry. This will be a further special case of this toy models. Does it answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. So in particular, to comment on this in particular, we can now create initial data set where, for example, our momentum will not vanish, which would always do in rotational symmetry. So in this one in particular, we now allow for the angular dependence of our quantities so that we can have initial data sets and study their total energy bounds such that the energy will not automatically be the ADM mass. So, and to study these relations, we now look at the canonical leaves of our foliation. So similar to the rotationally symmetric case, the idea will now to study monotone quantities, in particular the Hawking energy, along this leaves of our initial data set which will be coordinate spheres and are canonically given by how we define our family of initial data sets. And since there, in any ambient space-time, the mean curvature vector is given by this following formula along these leaves of our foliation. The Hawking energy of the foliation, now again only in n equal to 3, will be given by this explicit formula. And now to establish total energy bounds, we want to look at the monotone quantities, about the monotone properties of this functional. To be more precisely, we will want to study it under three additional requirements, motivated by the requirements of the Penrose, usual Penrose inequality. So we want to have the dominant energy condition. So we want that mu is greater or equal than the norm of J. We want that the inner boundary, which will exactly be our sphere at the radius R0, satisfies the following relation, which then just trades to the fact that the mean curvature vector in the space-time will be null, and therefore we understand this as a generalized or as an apparent horizon. And to not have this data hidden behind a further horizon, we need in some sense an outermost condition, and in our case, we'll give this as a strictly outer uncrypt conditions, which is this inequality, and will translate to the fact that away from the horizon, all the leaves of our foliation will have strictly space-like mean curvature vector in an ambient space-time everywhere. And then we want to use the fact that now at this horizon, the Hawking energy will have this nice property that will exactly take the value square root of the area of our horizon divided by 16 pi and asymptotically go towards our ADM energy. And then similar to the to the rotationally symmetric case or along inverse mean curvature flow in the time symmetric case, we see that our Hawking mass will indeed be monotone, and therefore, and we can just compute this, prove this by direct computation. So we see here that in the slightly more general case where we allow our path of metrics not to be just a round metric and our functions to depend on angles in general, we see we'll have some additional terms here. And in this case, we're also not using quite the full dominant energy scalar, but rather just the radial direction. But of course, we can throw all these away first of all, so we still have the monotonicity of the Hawking energy and therefore can establish the following total energy bound even in our larger class of spacetimes, where again now the ADM energy will in general not be the ADM mass, therefore it's not a full Penrose inequality because this is just an energy bound. However, we have the full rigidity in the sense that equality can only hold if and only if we embed into the Schwarzschild spacetime, and we in fact recover the rotationally symmetric case in the rigidity. So at least in the rigidity, everything just reduces to the fact that the ADM energy will be the ADM mass because the momentum will vanish. And indeed, the proof of the rigidity statement relies on the fact that we first reduce everything to rotationally symmetry. So and then we can apply the Penrose inequality in rotational symmetry, which is well known in all dimensions and has been proven by several methods. And to be brief here, I'm only referencing this overview article by Mars, where you can get a full list of references.
A question?
Yes.
Can you show your previous slide again?
Yeah, sure.
So what, the one before, what are the conditions again, just to the condition of the horizon? So you have this, the first one is that an apparent horizon one. And yes. what do you assume about P? Nothing else? That's all they're assuming?
Yeah. So aside from the asymptotic conditions, this is exactly what we assume. Like N and P have the following relation at the inner boundary.
Okay. So that's the only condition of the boundary.
Yeah. So if you go one slide back, you will see that exactly this term here, the length of the mean curvature vector in an ambient space-time will exactly vanish.
Thank you.
So going back to this, we now have establish this lower energy bound in line of a full Penrose inequality, although it's not a full Penrose inequality because it's not the mass yet. However, we have not considered the full dominant energy scalar. So we didn't have really used the full positivity of this quantity. And as a rather naive approach, we will we just brutally add this in. So we consider the space integral over our initial data set, where we just consider this difference, which of course will be non-negative. And since we assume everything to be integrable, this will also be well defined if we let r go to infinity. So we get a new non-negative finite constant. And we can see that if we define this function phi like this, it will vanish in rotational symmetry. But in the general case, we can now subtract this from our Hawking energy, and this will still yield a non-negative quantity. In particular, we can play the game again and establish a slightly refined energy bound in the following sense. So that the lower bound not only depends on the area of the horizon, but rather also on the integral of this difference on our whole initial data set. And here we only have partial rigidity in the sense that we do not know that we embed into Schwarzschild. We hope it, but we can prove it in this case. But what we can prove is that we have equality if and only if we have vanishing dominant energy scalar. So the Hamiltonian constraint is exactly the norm of J. J will vanish in the radial direction, and our metric component N will only depend on R, and our path along of metrics will be trivial. However, we can of course take also slightly a quantity slightly less than this this value. And in this case, for a lot of examples, we of course will recover rigidity. And this corresponds to a nicer a choice F, which will still be non-negative, but possibly slightly below our function phi. And the hope would now, especially if we want to believe in a full Penrose inequality, which we do, that we can pick a nice, either geometrically or physically motivated choice of F. And of course, what would be particularly nice would be if we can somehow relate this space integral with the absolute momentum of our spacetime to get a full Penrose inequality. So how am I in time? Do I have like 2 minutes, or should I finish here?
Have to ask you to sum up.
Okay. Then I will make the second point brief. Sorry, I didn't get to that. So again, just assuming rotational symmetry, we're now looking at the second topic, which is the construction of the initial data sets, which in different contexts has also been considered by Bartnik Eisenberg and by Kshukash Rax in a near Schwarzschild vacuum context. Although we think about the question of asymptotically flatness in this general setting appears to be new. And just as a brief remark, this turns out to be true. So in the rotationally symmetric case, we can solve this evolutionary system to get asymptotically flat rotationally symmetric initial data. And in certain cases, namely the one where the momentum density identically vanishes, we can also construct the maximal time development of our initial data. Sorry for the slight overextension, and thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much for this nice and interesting talk on the Penrose inequality was really nicely substituted by an integral term, which may be of interest for many of people of the audience. Who has questions from the audience or from Zoom? Do you have any? Piers, more question about? I mean, I'm curious about the last part. You said that in rotational symmetry, you can repeat basically the argument and you can get similar results, you know, giving up the high rotational symmetry.
So you're talking about the construction of the initial data?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so sorry I didn't get to talk about that. So the idea is now in rotational symmetry, where everything only is assumed to be depending on R, we see that the equation decouples and we just get up with two ODEs. And then defining this auxiliary function H here above, we see that the constraint equation essentially become two first order inhomogeneous ODE, where this inhomogeneous part C1 and C2 are given by the following. So we now assume that these functions K, mu, and J0, which is like the radial part of the momentum constraint, are given. Mm-hmm. And then we can see that we can first solve for P, and then insert P also in the ODE of H, and then we can solve also for H analytically. And then analytically, your solutions will be given as the following. So this also contains the part about with cosmological constant, but if you set this to zero, then you see by this integral relations, if you assume the right appropriate decay on our given quantities, then this will turn out to give asymptotically flattens.
Any hope for the case where you have angular dependencies? I mean, have you looked at the problem or this is
for the general case? This was the next step. What is ideally the next step to look at this coupled evolutionary system?
Okay. Thanks a lot. Is there any question?
Yes, okay. I have a question. Can you hear me? Yes. If I understood well, you're working with the Matulidis and Shen construction, and you replace the condition of the surface to be minimal of to be with zero space-time curvature, right?
Yes.
And you say that this characterizes an apparent horizon. My question is that this mean curvature is equivalent to have the product of the two expansions.
So,
and the apparent horizon is only one of the expansions vanishes, one particular one, the one with the minus sign. How do you know that it's actually this expansion, the one that is vanishing and not the other one?
We generally don't. That's why there's an absolute value here. So either choice of sign, depending on your conventions, without the absolute value, would correspond to either a mods or a mids. And I've been very brief here, but that's why I'm calling this a generalized apparent horizon, where we merely require that the product of both expansions has to vary. And in general, this will not be sufficient for a Penrose inequality, but it turns out that in this specific family of initial data, you get a Penrose type energy bounds even for generalized apparent horizons, where you merely want the product of the expansions to be vanishing.
Okay, thank you then.
Okay, Piet, the last question.
So you talked about one parameter family of initial data sets. Where does this come into? Where does this one parameter family of data comes in? Where is this parameter relevant to?
So you mean why will this one parameter family of metrics? So
why do I need one? I mean, the last part was just a single metric, right? Why did you need a one parameter family?
So in a general sense, you could always take the path of metrics to be trivial, but we think under these assumptions you can make it more general. Like this vanishing trace is sufficient to replace the case where you only look at the trivial path. So I think just from an analytic perspective, it will not be harder to include this case.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, let's say thanks again to Marcus and let's move forward.